Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. How are my loyal listeners? Thank you for your continued support. And remember to click that subscribe button, everybody. This is an amazing episode because boarding the mothership is Eugenie Bondurant. She stars in Werewolf by Night, available on Disney Plus. Now come aboard as we go traversing the stars.
Hello, Miss Bondurant. Thank you so much for coming to the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate you asking me to be on.
It's totally my pleasure. It's an honor to speak with you.
It's my pleasure.
So I always start off with a question of inspiration. So what inspired your love for acting and who were your earliest influences?
My love for acting, well, it started when I was very, very young. And I used to ham it up at home and then get terribly shy once I left home and forget everything that I memorized. So there was a large gap in, from childhood to adulthood. But honestly, you know, how I ended up getting into acting was from a former boyfriend. He and I broke up and I needed something to do. And my friend said, take an acting class, which I went, no, I'm not an actor. Are you kidding? And I took it and I, you know, of course, fell in love and I started working and the rest is history.
So you must be agonized. He's like, oh, I could have met her after she was a famous actress.
Right. So, and what was the second part of that question?
Who were your earliest influences?
Oh, my earliest influences. That's tough. I can tell you, you know, there are a lot of influences I have now. There's so many people that are just incredible inspirations. One of which is, was in the most recent Werewolf by Night, Helen Sansom Harris, Harriet Harris. I don't know how I said her name wrong, but Tilda Swinton is another one. I mean, she just transforms herself into just, anyway, I have a list, but.
Tilda Swinton is awesome. Is anyone in my list of the listeners have ever watched Constantine? She is fantastic in Constantine. She plays the angel Gabriel.
She's incredible, incredible actress.
I will say she probably, and also from Doctor Strange, she can literally do almost anything, I think.
Yes, I know. That's what's amazing to me. You see her one way and then I look in something else and there she is, like the nice mother. I think, no, she was not a nice mother in this other project. Are you kidding? She's manipulative and evil and mean and strange and blah, blah, blah. Incredible. So what a range.
So how about you? So when you say, since you look up to her, when you're performing your roles, are you thinking the same thing about how to make each role totally unique from everything else?
Absolutely. Indeed, I am. There are certain things, and the reason, one of the reasons why I find her inspiring is because she has very interesting features. Her jawline, her cheekbones, the way the shape of her face is, how she moves, she's got this way about her. And I have these crazy cheekbones and I'm 6'1" and I'm thin. And I think, gosh, man, I usually end up playing these wonderful, fun roles. And she does too. So another reason why I want to, you know, I look at her for inspiration. She's an incredible actress and she's able to jump over to all kinds of things. So yeah.
So I read that you actually have earned a certificate to teach the Meisner School of Acting.
Yes, indeed.
Now, the interesting thing about the Meisner technique is that it's all based on people you're performing against, is my understanding of it.
Yes, yes.
So as an actress and someone who is yourself very good at it, how dependent are you on the other actors being as good as you?
What a compliment. Okay, so Meisner technique is exactly what you said, but it also is based on using your imagination, based on truth. So it's up to us. And you know, on a film, just tell everyone, some people probably have been on a film set, maybe some people haven't, I don't know, but on a film set, everything is out of order. You may be doing the master shot, which is a wide shot or establishing shot. And then eventually they're going to come in and get your coverage, which means your close-up. Well, when you're doing a close-up, sometimes you're not talking with your scene partner. You're talking to a little piece of blue tape that's on the very side of the camera. And you're hearing someone way on the side. So it's a little confusing. So Meisner, I have to do all my Meisner work off camera, you know, reaching deep inside of me. And yes, indeed, when you've got people like Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson, they don't let you go. I mean, they are with you. That is, it's like a masterclass in acting. So yeah, there's a little bit of Meiser, not necessarily for the close-up, but the close-up, you've already done your work for it. So yeah.
So I mean, part of the, part of the idea of it as well is the ability to improvise.
Absolutely.
As well. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. What happens when the person you're acting against does something unexpected, as far as, because I mean, once again, you're acting alongside this individual and you're kind of expecting what you think they're going to do, but they take their character in a totally different way. How does the Meiser technique deal with that?
Oh my gosh, that is so delicious when that happens. Because what happens in Meiser, we're always checking in with our partner. We're always working opposite that. If that person changes, I have an observation. I'm trained to have an observation about that and respond accordingly, which means my dialogue will be different. Obviously, I mean, it's organic because you've got, it puts you in a mindset where you're speaking truthfully and organically, and it's with memorized dialogue. So there shouldn't be a struggle. It's incredible. What a journey. You have to be confident. You have to be a confident actor to be able to roll with that. And it doesn't mean that you have to have been acting for years and years and years. It's just you have to feel confident in being there and being present and being truthful and connected.
So how reliant is it on you understanding your own character in a deeper way and their character in a deeper way?
Well, what I do is I take my character's journey out of the script.
Okay.
And I figure out the arc of the story in that person's point of view. I look at my character as a protagonist in her own story. So when I'm doing a deep dive into why my character did whatever they or is doing whatever they're doing, then I have justified their behavior, right? So, you know, in regards to the other characters, since I'm really responsible for my character, not for the other character. What I am responsible, though, is what leads me to the next event.
Mm.
You know, so, you know, what they do is what they do. I can't be necessarily responsible for them, but I am their partner. You know what? Does that make sense?
No, it does. I guess a question I have is, how much is what you do trying to predict what is going to come towards you?
Well, you see that in the script, and you've got to prepare for that. And I usually take things apart. When I take things apart, if there's going to be a shift, if something's coming at me and it changes either my opinion or my perspective or changes what I do or physically or mentally or verbally or whatever, I've got to be ready for that. So Meiser helps you with that. You're always, because of that improvisational style that it has, and also the process of preparing for a character. So let's say my character says, or my partner says something to me, which makes me change my mind. Or if I'm, you know, laughing and all of a sudden they say something to me that makes me, you know, feel scared or in danger, then I've got to figure out, how am I going to get there? If they haven't given me anything in return, I've got to do it on my own. Meiser helps you with that. So, and you break apart each scene or each section and work on those sections almost individually and then marry them together. And it doesn't have to be, you know, I always tell my actors, because I teach acting as well, you don't, there are a lot of actors who marry, let's bring that word up, a method or a style. I'm not pure Meisner. I mean, I don't know I'm whatever works style, but primarily Meisner, because Meisner really creates the substance, right? So I feel like you're the one, the actor's the one doing the work. The actor's the one in the scene. The actor's the one that has to be cognizant and aware of what's happening within the scene, with the scene partner. You have to be aware of everything. And that's something Meisner really talks to, you know, really trains. It's not just your scene partner. What is the effect of the environment on you and your scene partner? Because I can call that out, not necessarily in the dialogue, but in my actions. I can look at him a certain way, and because with maybe a change of attitude because of how he's reacting or she's reacting. I feel like I'm going all over the place.
No, are you following along? It makes sense.
Okay.
I have my one question that is, where does the director fit in that? Because sometimes I imagine what your instincts are and what a director wants is not always going to align perfectly.
What director?
No, any director.
I'm just kidding. What, there's a director? That's true. Sorry, I just wanted to cross my legs for a second. So the director is the captain of the ship. And the director has so much that's going on. I always tell my actors, you have to be 100% prepared when you walk on set, because there are some directors that are actors' directors, and they might have a conversation. What do you think is going on? And an actor might go to the director and say, okay, I'm a little confused of where the scene is going, or I think the motivation is this. What do you think? And some directors are open and excited to hear that, and some directors don't have time, or that's not the way they direct. So you've got to be ready for anything. Whether if my choice or choices, right, are not parallel to a director's choice, and that's happened. I mean, it's not been a drag out fight. I'm a really low maintenance actor, and the director says, you know, why don't you? I don't think it's that, you know, humorous. I think you need to pull back. Sure. I love that. It's like, bring it on. You're watching the monitor. Hell yeah. I don't know what I look like. So let me guide the ship, you know. If they give me direction, great. Fabulous. Because you know what? They see it. If they'll see it in rehearsal. Right? They'll see it if you're auditioning for something, they see it in the audition. And if there's time, the director will talk to you in advance. If there's certain pivotal scenes, they'll talk to you in advance and say, okay, so I was looking at this and da da da, if it's that important to them.
How has your understanding of the method of Meisner and the techniques changed the more you've taught it?
Yes. Yes. I add more stuff. You know, the other day I thought, ooh, I'm gonna bring in this improv. I just created this improv, which normally I don't do. Normally it's very, you know, very structured. In 2015, on NPR and in the New York Times, there was a series of questions. These two people had done this research. I think it was Dr. Anon or something like that. At any rate, he had written love questions. Okay, questions that when two people ask these questions of one another, the likelihood of them falling in love is greater. And they're really deep questions. I mean, I remember back in 2015 reading this, and I thought, I'm going to keep this for one of my acting classes. It's going to be so cool. And I never used it. And I had it on my computer, and I thought, I ran into it the other day, and I went, okay, I'm bringing it in. And what ended up happening, so this is a way of things shifting and changing. And I think every teacher has that. Anytime you teach any kind of method, you grow with your actors, right? And you change things according to just the mood or momentum or the rhythm or what you've experienced or whatever. But in this case, Meisner is very quick. Like what you were saying, improvisational, it's like you have a reaction, you have it now. But in this case, I said, think about it. Take a moment, pause, let it rest, let it sit. So when you ask a question, the other person doesn't have to immediately dive into the question and answering it. And then the person asking the question doesn't immediately have to have an observation. You can take a moment. Now, that is opposite Meisner. Meisner is, what's happening right now? What's happening in the extreme? What's happening all around you? You've got to know it. And it was fun. It was so much fun. It was so much fun. Like this is an example of one of the questions. If you knew when you were going to die, what would you do? What would you say? What would you say to someone? What would you do? With whom would you do it for the next year? Oh, wow. I mean, it makes you think about it, right? So, all right. So within a year, you can pack in whatever you wanted to pack in. What would you do? You know, And that the other person had to think about. Well, just the mere fact of sitting there thinking about the question, that's something to observe, right? So you're observing every nuance. So the person who asked the question observes every single nuance of that other person, which is just wonderful. Humans are wonderful creatures, right? Yeah. And so, and then the answer and how the person answers is another observation, and the tone and what they say, or maybe the stories that they say or whatever, and how it affects you. How could you not observe that? Only anybody who has blinders on you just, you know, wouldn't be able to see how it affects everyone in the room, you know? So
the important
long drawn out answer.
So the important question is, did any of the students fall in love after doing the questions?
Well, I did tell the whole class, y'all are going to fall in love with each other. So I teach three classes, right? And they are tight. They're just so amazing, incredible people that I feel honored to be on their journey with them, and they're on mine with me. So they are, in a way, you know, to my master class, when I said, well, this is not with the intention for you falling in love. And then one piped up, we're already all in love with each other. I said, yeah, that's right.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. You're into like so many things, because not only are you doing that, though, but I also read that you're a founding member of what they call the Radio Theater Project.
Yes, indeed I am.
Is that still?
I've been a little busy last year. I was a little busy, so I didn't get to do any of it. But yes, go ahead.
Last I saw, it was, I think 2019 was the last season, I think, of it. Is that true, or did you do one since?
No, it's still going on. We took off, obviously, 2020. So we started 2019, and I think they stopped March of 2020. But 2021, the end of, for this past year, they picked it back up in 2020. That was the end of 2021? No, 21, 22. They picked it back up last year. And last year was a little busy and chaotic. So with filming and traveling and blah, 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 blah. So yeah, I think you're right. I probably have not been in a project since 2019. I think I'm supposed to be doing the December show. So that's exciting, you know? It is, the Radio Theater Project is, they're all short scripts. And a bunch of actors get up. We do it in front of a live audience. It's recorded. It's put up on the web. And each one of us has a different character. Sometimes we have multiple characters. We've got Foley on the side. For those of you who don't know what Foley is, it's special effects. It's the walking. And so you see the shoes on the wooden plank and then the door creaking. And so Matt, who's our Foley expert, has a miniature door, which has a doorknob, the creaky doorknob, like, you know, and then the glass, the water. And so he pours it really high and it goes into the glass, like, so you hear the real sound of that. Anything of punching or muffled sounds. He's got a big cloth bag that's, you know, this giant bag full with clothes, and he punches the bag like, poof, poof. So it's all this muffled sound. It's so much fun. I don't know whether to watch him when I'm in the audience, the actors, or Carol Downing, who does our signing. It's signing for the deaf. It's very cool.
So when you think about it, like from an acting standpoint, how does that, because you're kind of, once again, like a radio show, a little restricted in what you can, movements of your own. How does that change how you think about acting and the character being the restrictions of radio?
Oh my goodness. You have to be bigger, much bigger. My arms are moving. What did you say? And I'm making all these crazy gestures that are so over the top. So I feel like it's more it's more broad than even a play. So imagine you're doing a play, but it's, you know, if it was taped video wise, I mean, we have taped video, but you'd see us, we're all making crazy faces and just nuts. It's nuts. It's crazy fun. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the difference.
Do you guys tour or is it in one location?
It's in one location in St. Petersburg, Florida. It's Studio at 620. Yeah.
Are there YouTube
videos? And we have toured, actually. We have done that, but just regionally.
Are there YouTube videos of it that people can watch?
There might be. You know what? That's a great idea. I'm going to do that next time.
You got me wanting to watch it now. Let's see how this happens.
We're all standing behind the microphone now. See, here's the thing. You've got to be really close to the microphone, but just farther. Like, if you have a booming voice, you've got to be pulled back from the microphone. And I don't. So they're always saying, okay, closer to the microphone, closer to the mic, usually. Close, close, close. But then you don't want to hit the mic because then there's just, yeah. And that's when I can really go over the top. It's you know, your head explodes.
I mean, the cool thing about the idea of your show, because I haven't been able to see it because I live in Rhode Island, is that radio acting seems like a dying art. Like, I don't know of any radio shows that exist anymore on the radio, and it seems like a dying art. It's nice to see someone bring back.
Yeah. You know, that was the intention of it too. Way back, I think we started it in 05. No, not in 05. My bad. It was in, we bought our house in 09, so I think it was 09, something like that, 09, 10, 2010, something like that. Mm. And that, Mimi Rice was the person who got us all together and said, okay, we're doing this. How do we do this? And we figured it out and we pitched it and the studio said yes. And here we are, off to the races every season.
It just sounds cool. If you can find a way to get on a YouTuber thing, I definitely would want to check it out.
I would love that. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you.
Totally my pleasure. So, you teach acting.
Yes.
You have the radio theater project. Mm-hmm. You also play Azarel.
Yeah.
Azarel in Werewolf by Night, which was so badass, by the way. That was so cool. As I was watching it, I was messaging your post. I was like, I need to talk to you. So how do you get involved with Werewolf by Night?
Wait, what? I'm sorry.
How do you get involved with Werewolf by Night?
Well, I got an audition. You know, I have an agent and they send me auditions and I got an audition. I didn't know what it was. I had no idea. They didn't put the name of it or the project. They said to be disclosed later. And I went, oh yeah, okay, fine. And there were dummy sides, which are what that means. Sides are pages from a script, just to let the audience know for which you're auditioning. And dummy sides means something was written. Everyone would be auditioning with these same sides. And they just wanted to see what your take would be on certain material. So I thought, oh, okay. I didn't think anything of it. Well, lo and behold, about 3 weeks later, I get a phone call from my agent. You know, you, as an actor, your job is to audition and to work, right? And to accept the phone calls. So when you get that offer, regardless of whether you audition for it or not, you say yes or, you know, whatever it is. Well, anyway, so my agent calls and says, well, you're pinned. I thought, am I in college? Am I pinned to a fraternity or something? I mean, I'd been pinned before, but still, you know, what? And she said, no, you're pinned for the Marvel project. And I went, Marvel? No idea. So anyway, that's what happened. And they knew my work. When I finally booked it, the director and the producer and I had a meeting. And they said, yeah, we know your work from Conjuring. So that was a nice feeling. It was really good. So they said, yeah, you're going to be perfect for this one. We really had you in mind for it. And I thought, oh, and I was really excited. I mean, what an incredible cast. Incredible, incredible. Again, like taking a masterclass. I'm so grateful. I'm like a sponge. Oh, she did that? Wow. You know, there it is.
I mean, not only that, though, but I mean, Marvel is the biggest franchise potentially in history. I mean, there's some arguments for Star Trek and Star Wars, but I'm pretty sure Marvel has become the largest franchise that history has ever seen in cinema. So when you heard you're part of that universe, what is that like for you? And just the idea also of how many people are going to be watching and be like, hey, the character from the comic book, blah, blah, blah.
Right. It's so true. So I'm going to answer you with something that happened in my class. So, of course, I was under an NDA. We filmed it. I couldn't say anything to anyone. I couldn't say the word Marvel. I couldn't say I play, you know, a badass. I couldn't say, you know, I run around, blah, blah, blah. So I didn't, right? Mm-hmm. Until the trailer came out. And I'm teaching class. It's my master class. And I, by being on this project, I got a chair back. I don't know what you know, like you get when you are doing a run of show. Okay. They usually make backstory, like the captain's chairs that everybody sits in. And then usually has your name on it or the character name or whatever. So they made one for me along with everyone in the cast. And I got to take it home. I thought that's a really cool thing. You know, I don't know when I'd ever use it, but I love having it. It's a treasure. So I have a chair like that in my studio. And so on the side, no one ever saw me do this. I switched the back and I said, I came out in the front and I said, I just want to thank you. And all it had was the hold name. It wasn't Azarello beginning. It was Linda. So it had Linda on there. So it's not Eugenie, it's Linda. And people are looking at me like, Linda. I said, I just want to thank you for supporting me because I feel like my class supports me like I do them.
Yeah.
And I turned it around. I turned the back around. There's Marvel's Werewolf by Night thing. And they just got up and screamed and were clapping and yelling. And one of my girls said, I've been so fangirling over you. When I saw the trailer, I couldn't believe it. You didn't tell us. And I said, you're in Marvel. It's true. So yeah, so there's a little bit of fangirling and I guess I'm fangirling myself. I don't know, but
it's always great to have the hero worship of your students. <That's
true. laughs> But you know, I do it for them too, and I'm so proud of them. And you know, there you go. Once you're a friend, you're a friend.
Well, the cool thing about I'm always getting the name right. I keep on saying Azrael, but it's Azrael.
You can probably say whatever you want as long as you say it. Azrael, Azrael, Azrael.
Azrael.
I think that's how you say it, pronounce it. Azrael, Azrael, Azrael. I don't know. I'd love to hear what people's interpretation is.
You know, I can hopefully some of our listeners are screaming at the screen right now going, it's this. And I'll be like, that's
I know.
Awesome.
I hope they do. Yeah, do it.
So when you were given that role, you finally found out who you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find the through way into that character?
Oh boy. Okay. So we did not have access to the script early on. And I kept on thinking, well, when are we going to get that script? Because I really would like to know what my character is about. I had a little bit of character description from the audition, but again, you know, that could change. Mm. And it was 2 days before filming, we got the script or got certain pages like, okay, this is what you're filming on Monday. What? What? What is this? At any rate, I did do a deep dive. I was able at some point to get access to my dialogue and to the actions and to the actions of the other people and cobble together quickly some semblance of what I thought her backstory was and the reason why she was there and what her spine phrase was. You probably have no idea what I'm talking about that, but what the deeper meaning was, what was her desire, and I always try to have a secret, you know, like what's going on, you know, she really, and what that is and how it's involved with the character and how it relates to the other people in the project. So yeah, it was pretty quick.
So
maybe 2 days.
So what was the spine phrase?
So the spine phrase, recognition.
Okay.
Recognition that I'm number one, not necessarily with that group, but my backstory was she came from a family of hunters and she has a twin brother, and the twin brother was the one that was designated to be the lead hunter. And my desire was to prove my family wrong. And so recognition that I am the better hunter and that I'm going to beat everybody's ass and that I can't believe I thought of this, but I thought, oh, no. You, my Karen, I felt like, gosh, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I manipulated my brother so that he was no longer able to physically hunt and that I was the first, you know, so I don't want to go into that so much because it make me sound like someone not very nice. I thought that is the only way she can be in that hunt. There's no one she's necessarily saving. She is fighting, and she's fighting for her name, and she is fighting as a woman. And honestly, I mean, this might be some story giveaway, and just like a disclaimer, but you have Elsa Bloodstone, right? And here, there are only three women. And I'm a hunter, Elsa's a hunter. And I thought, yeah, that's who's going to get this Bloodstone. Well, unfortunately, I didn't end up getting the Bloodstone, but I worked very hard in getting it. So my thought was, oh, the both of us should get in cahoots with one another and get that Bloodstone because we're women.
Right.
You know, and here in the top of the show, you've got these men that are kind of looking at each other and they're trying to be better than the other one. Like, come on. I'm the last one to, spoiler alert, I'm the last one to get killed. Hello. You know, so anyway, there's was a lot more to that, but on the outside looking in, that's part of it. My backstory.
We were just going to have a good fight with Laura Donnelly. What was that like?
I know, right? Oh my gosh, it was so much fun. That woman is so great. She's so funny. And she's got this dry. So what you see on camera is who she is. I mean, she's dry like that. And so we had stunt training for many, many days beforehand. And here I am going in for stunt training. And the stunt group, such an incredible stunt team. Well, they had coordinated everything. It was like this dance, this gorgeous dance for every single one of us. So I'm going, oh my gosh, I don't know how to do this and these moves. And I'm sore, my back hurts, and I need a massage, man. It's like, ooh. And she comes in because she'd done all this training on the Nevers.
Yeah.
They'd done months of training, stunt training. So she's in like strong shape. And so her stunt double teaches her the choreography and she picks it up like this. I'm looking at her going, Laura, how do you do that? I'm fumbling over my feet. You know, I'm pretty slick and smooth, but not with this. She's incredible. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. And thank goodness for our stunt team. I don't know, quick fun fact. I don't know if anybody knows this, but, and I haven't posted this on social media, but I'm about to. Jess Durham was my stunt double. And she was also my stunt double for The Conjuring.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. That is one person I have to say. So when I booked this, I texted her and said, do you happen to have been booked? I mean, I'm texting her because I can't say anything. Happen to have been booked on something that might be shooting next week, but maybe might be going for, wardrobe fittings that, I don't know, might be having a lot of stunts in it, but the filming is X amount of days. That she goes, hell yeah. And I'm working with you. And I thought, I'm so excited.
That's awesome.
Yeah. She and I are friends and it's really nice to see that that girl is powerful and strong and funny and great. And how she does what she does is beyond me.
So do some people, and there are people that they're usually doubling for, do they tend to stay from movie to movie together? Like, are they a team?
Oh, God, let's please hope so. I hope the next kind of stunt stuff that I do, that I hope I'm in the position where I can say, please get Jess. Please. You know, she makes me look really good because she's so good. Yeah, I want to say yes. I'm putting that out into the universe.
So when you're when you have a stunt person and you're also doing your stunts as well on the or at least the action, do you have to like match up how you move in a way that's similar?
Yes, that's why there was so much training. Normally speaking, and especially in a situation like this where there were a lot of stunts and a lot of specific choreography attached to this. Yes, there was training and training and training. And so the stunt team, put together and pitched to the director, okay, this is how we see this choreography happening. What do you think? What adjustments do you think should be going on, et cetera, et cetera? And so when we come in, the actors come in, the stunt people say, okay, we've got you. And they work with production on how many days can we have, you know, the actors and which day. So, and every time, I mean, when I came in, I said to production, please, any off days, any half days, any couple of hours that I'm not in a scene, send me to stunt training. I need help. I need all the help I can get. So, but fun. It was really fun. I was very sore and having a blast at the same time.
So to the people who know you now think you're like a badass swordsman or something now that
they do. If you could have seen, I mean, it was edited. This project was edited so tightly and so beautifully. But if you could have seen some of the work that was put into that, just beautiful. I call it dancing, but it's not really dancing. This, you know, sword, just all the work, just gorgeous. The footwork and the arm work and the movements, really beautiful.
Well, the director, I'm going to get the name right, Michael
Giacchino.
I knew I was going to get that one wrong. Yeah. I like guaranteed that
I'll
one.
I'll do it. It took me 3 months to try to remember how to say his name. So Michael Giacchino. Yeah, Giacchino.
Giacchino. Okay.
Yeah.
If he's watching, thank you. I finally got it right. Thank you.
I'm probably saying it wrong.
Oh, anyway. that'd be funny. He's watching and going, that's not how you say my damn name. <wrong. laughs> So that was, if my understanding is correct, that was his very first directorial effort. Because he was prior to that, he was a composer.
Yeah, indeed he is.
So
Academy Award winning composer. Thank you very much.
Nice little tip of his hat too, right? So what was it like working with him? And because he was a first-time director, what was that experience like?
So, okay, one thing, happy. He was happy. Not to say directors aren't happy. They're happy. They've got this great job they're doing. It's wonderful. It's fun. And they signed on for it. But he would walk in, big smile on his face. We're shooting a Marvel project. You know, at the end of the day, big smile on his face. And when he'd look at the monitor, big smile on his face. I mean, how, you can't. Get anything, ask for anything more, right? So the next thing too, he actually when he was a kid, when he was in high school, and I found this out because his brother was on the set and he said, let me show you this. He used to shot little short films.
Very cool.
And he loved it, and that's his passion, and comic books are his passion, so this is a perfect meshing. And he also shot a few shorts. If you go on his IMDb page, you probably can see them. And so what a passion project to be able to get. And the music, I mean, the music with this project, what a great experience, you know? It just blends beautifully.
I think what I love so much about that movie is that it feels like a 1950s Hammer horror film.
Yeah. You
know, and the aesthetic, how it looked in the season. I mean, when you were thinking about your acting, were you also thinking about how, like, an older aesthetic as well?
Okay. You know, I just read this and we only were privy to certain things while on set. I found out while doing ADR, which is voiceover for your actions, Michael said, it's going to be in black and white. And I thought, oh, that's fun. Wow. So it wasn't while we were filming, but what I read in an interview that Michael did was that his intention was to film it in black and white the entire time. He filmed it in color. And what the article said, and I thought, man, this is just so cool. So we didn't know that. But he showed the producer the black and white version and the color version. And they went for the black and white. And the black and white, so he had it in his mind. This is how this guy thinks. Okay, Michael, if you're listening, yes. I say yes. Whenever you're booking me for something else, the answer is yes, okay? So yes, let's play again, okay? So this is how he thinks. This is how creative this man is. Mm. And you can see by the result of the project. It's wonderfully shot. It's wonderfully composed. It's wonderfully edited. The costumes are marvelous. The set is marvelous. Makeup is on point.
I will say the black and white was the good call. It would have lost a lot in color.
I know. Did you notice the cigarette burns?
No. I'm trying to remember if I remember. I do remember thinking this felt like watching the old, Wolfman type movies.
Yes.
So I think, are you going to do more action movies in the future?
You know what? I'm saying yes. I don't know what they're going to be, but yes! Please, so, sign me up.
So what is next for you?
I've got a project coming out in a few weeks called 115 Grains. And I'm going to retract what I was thinking and not saying. I'm saying I play a badass therapist, mental health therapist. I don't run around killing anybody, but still, I play a mental health therapist. It's actually a pretty dramatic film on PTSD, police PTSD, and suicide, police suicide. And I'm very happy to have gotten that role. And I'm the glue that keeps the film together. And actually, this policeman together, this cop together. So I'm excited about that.
So where can that one be found?
Well, we'll see. I don't know yet. We're doing the director is doing a private screening for us, so I don't know what his intentions are. Again, I know this is probably a tough time for him, meaning he's, scheduling and blah, 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 blah. So yeah, I don't know whether it's going to be streaming. I don't know whether it's going to be released. I don't know. So yeah. So that's the most recent one. I've got another one in the works and blah, blah, blah. So yay.
Oh, I can imagine. I'm going to say, I imagine people be banging down your door now after Werewolf by Night, being like, you're not going to be like the assassin in like every great action movie coming up.
That's right. Just Durham, the stunt, my stunt double and me. God.
That'd be absolutely awesome. So the what was the name of the one you said you're going to, that's coming out, that you're going to be in?
115 grains. I would love that. Thank you very much. It would be my pleasure.